Okay, we are continuing to think on Wednesday nights about adding fruit to our life. And we looked the last couple of weeks really trying to make some practical applications to several areas of our life. And we looked for a couple of weeks at adding fruit to our wealth, our finances, and how we can bear spiritual fruit, even in the blessings that God has given to us. And I think we had some really good discussions about that. What we're going to do tonight, and probably at least next week, and perhaps even the week after that, depending upon how much y'all want to talk, because I know we have been discussing the marriage relationship on Sunday mornings for a few weeks. But we're going to think about adding spiritual fruit to our marriage. And I think, as I said to you last Wednesday, if you're in this class and you're not married, hopefully there's still something you can get out of these couple or three classes. Maybe you can think about just how you can apply the fruit of the Spirit to your family in general. As we begin tonight's class, I would like to have your participation and just ask for a show of hands of people in here who are married or have been married. Maybe your spouse has passed away. If you fit into that category, you're married or have been married, raise your hand. All right, so all of you single folks, these are the ones, people that you need to talk to. If you've been married at least 5 years, raise your hand. What about 10 years? Keep your hands up. 20? 40? 50? To impress upon our minds, for those of us who are married or those even who are single who hope to be married someday, have that in your future plan, that just in this congregation we have a lot of resources available to us when it comes to the marriage relationship. We have a lot of people here who have been married several decades. So maybe for those of us who haven't been married as long, when we have difficulties in our marriage, even when things are going well in our marriage, and we just, as we're thinking about in this class, more from a positive standpoint, we've kind of dealt with some of the negative things of marriage on the Sunday morning class, and we're certainly fine, we need both of those. But if you think about from a positive standpoint about how we can grow in our marriages, how we can as we're growing spiritually as individuals, as husbands and wives, how we can grow together spiritually and how we can add spiritual fruit to the most precious relationship that God has given to us, that we don't have to do it by ourselves. We certainly have the Word of God. We certainly have examples of married couples, lots of examples in the Scriptures that we can turn to for advice. We have looked at on Sunday morning class a lot of passages from the Proverbs, some from Psalms, and there in that wisdom literature, there's a lot of principles, spiritual truths that we can apply to our marriages. So we have a lot of tools, but I want all of us to realize just in this congregation, the people that are here, that we have a lot of tools at our disposal, and so we ought to use them. Also, I wanted us to see just how many people have been married for how long in this church. Because compared to out there in the world, and especially in our nation, the percentages of people in this congregation who have been married even 10, 20, 40, and especially 50 years, just there's nothing to compare to out in the world. We are, you know, that is a good thing, but we are maybe kind of strange in that regard as we compare ourselves to the rest of the world. There was a Aaron Andrews, when he sent his last report in June, he always has something to say about his family in that report. And he said something that I thought of that I would include in this class. And it goes along with what David has been talking about on Sunday mornings, even as he going to spend a few weeks talking about divorce and remarriage here in the next few weeks. Aaron talks about he and his wife back in June attended her 20th high school reunion. I think she's maybe 38, she's 39 or 40. He said that he and his wife received a reward for the longest married couple. At that point, they'd been married 17 years. They're celebrating 18 years this month. He said what that means is that everybody else who was married before us in her high school class, those first 2 years from age 18 to 20, that they are now divorced. I don't know how big her class was. She went to a high school in Birmingham, Alabama area. I assume it was a fairly large high school. But everybody else had been divorced. He says that there were only two couples that were married over 10 years. He goes on to say, what a sad testimony to the state of marriage today. It really is so today. It really is so that today more marriages fail than succeed. The problem is at least one or both in a relationship are not following God's plan for husbands and wives. Maybe that doesn't shock us because we just live in a culture where divorce is so common nowadays. But again, in this congregation, we are going exactly the opposite of the trend of our country, and that is definitely a good thing. You know, as I thought about all of that, even just Aaron and Tammy receiving that award, I don't know, he didn't say this in his report, I don't know if that gave them an opportunity to tell their classmates how they stayed married 17 years. What was the secret to that? That just sounds so sad that they might do that, but that maybe gave them an opportunity to say something about God and God's Word and the relationship and marriage. So I think having godly marriages that last, like many of us in this congregation, that last for decades, really is a good door opener for us. As we talked about in the Sunday morning class from Ephesians chapter 5, and especially that passage with maybe some other passages, that really the marriage relationship is pointing us, those of us who are married, but it's also pointing everybody when we see that relationship of marriage as God designed it, it ought to point our mind to another relationship. It ought to point our mind to the relationship of God. So just people in the world that we're around, like no one, if we've been married 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 plus years, that alone so much stands out in our culture, that it may provide us an opportunity that we can at least open the door to talking to someone about spiritual things and about God's design and order for things in the world. And maybe it may lead to some more discussions about their soul, things like that. So, you know, this is a wonderful congregation from a family standpoint. If you want to raise a family, this is not that we don't have problems in our families, not that we don't have problems in our marriages, but there are so many good marriages and so many good families here, and that is a wonderful thing. So thinking about that, before we get into really some things in the Bible, just a couple of other things I'd like to read, maybe set the stage for this. A little thing called the Marriage Box. I read this a little over 2 years ago when before Kurt and Julie got married at the wedding shower that several of you attended. I don't know if anybody remembers this. This was put on Facebook about 2.5 years ago, actually, by Joel Holt's mom. I don't think that she wrote it, but she shared it, and it just has a great thought and fits so well with what we want to talk about in this class. It says, most people get married believing a myth that marriage is a beautiful box full of all the things they have longed for. Companionship, intimacy, friendship, etc. The truth is that marriage at the start is an empty box. You must put something in before you can take anything out. There is no love in marriage. Love is in people, and people put love in marriage. There is no romance in marriage. You have to infuse it into your marriage. A couple must learn the art and form the habit of giving, loving, serving, praising, of keeping the box full. If you take out more than you put in, the box will be empty. And that's true really of the fruit of the Spirit as it applies to all of our life. That's true of our relationship with God, even though God is all of these characteristics that are mentioned there in Galatians 5. For us to really experience joy to its full, for us to experience peace with God, for us to experience love and all of those characteristics in that relationship we have with God, God's already put all those things into that relationship. We have to put something into it. But when you think about the marriage relationship, this little thing here I think is right, that we come into that sometimes with our own preconceived ideas and pictures in mind of what marriage is going to be, and that's certainly fine if they're based upon the Word of God. But they're not going to happen by accident. That's kind of the point. We have to continually add these spiritual characteristics and apply spiritual fruit to our marriage if we want it to be what God intended for it to be. Another article from several years ago from Pressing On magazine, about 3 years ago, they did a special issue on the fruit of the Spirit. And one preacher that used to be in Columbia, Tennessee, Andrew Roberts, wrote an article on the fruit of the Spirit in marriage. I'm just going to read a little bit of that. And then we'll get into our discussion this evening. He said, aside from the Garden of Eden, it is difficult to imagine any fruit more significant in the course of a marriage than the fruit of the Spirit. Sadly, this is the very fruit for which many couples, even Christian couples, are starved. Some marriages struggle today because individuals expect a marriage to provide these virtues, failing to realize that they are the ones who should be bringing these virtues to the marriage. Marriage is not the source of the fruit of the Spirit. Rather, living in the Spirit is the source of the fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5:25, we've already talked about. Walking in the Spirit is the cause, while the fruit of the Spirit is the effect. This fruit is a benefit, a blessing, a virtue that characterizes the faithful saint. Thus, if two saints are joined in marriage, it follows that their relationship would bear these graces. While spouses can demand to be treated with the fruit of the Spirit, their energies would be better served if instead both would work together to follow God. It has been said that if people would spend as much time watering their own lawn as they spend looking over the fence, then their grass would be greener. We've all heard that expression, not just applied to marriage. The psalmist penned, as we've looked at a couple of weeks on Sunday mornings, Psalm 127, verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain. So again, maybe just kind of saying in a different way what that little story on Facebook said, that we have to be very diligent. We have to put forth a lot of effort and work. Having a godly marriage is hard work, and it's constant, it's daily. It's like being good parents, godly parents, and raising godly children. It is a daily process. So let's think about the characteristics that are mentioned here in Galatians 5:22-23 that we discussed several weeks ago and just talked about what each of those were in some depth. And let's think about how we could add these characteristics, add this spiritual fruit to our marriage, and what application we can make to our marriage. You think about love. That's where Paul begins this list. Love is really the foundation. It's the foundation of our relationship with God. And if we're going to have a godly marriage, one in which we're growing closer to God and growing closer to each other, then we have to start with love. What are we talking about here? about love and applying it to marriage?
Giving up of yourself.
Okay, giving up of yourself. So the Duke.
Well, you know, I just thought as you were going through the introduction there, but you know, marriage is, there's not an autopilot button on marriage. And same way with love. I don't know where I heard this, if it's true or not, but I was speaking to somebody a long time ago, talking about telling your wife you love her. He says, well, I told her I loved her when we married, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let her know. Now, that's marriage is in trouble before it got started. So it's something that you work on, like you said, Lord, that love is a growing proposition.
Anybody else have something to say about love?
I think it's important to understand what word this is in the Greek language, to understand what it's talking about specifically. Because I think when people think of marriage, they think of romantic love. Mm-hmm. And this love is not that. This love is the agape love, which is the unconditional love. So if you think about it, what that means is I'm going to love you regardless of the circumstances. I'm gonna love you regardless of how you treat me. I'm gonna love you regardless of the situation we're in financially, or any other condition that's going on, health-wise, whatever may come your way. And I think that may be one of the keys to the longevity of a marriage is that type of love. Is that no matter what happens, I choose to love you. I choose to care for you, not because you treated me well, not because you did something for me, but because of who you are. And that's what the fruit of the Spirit is in this case.
I think that's an excellent point. You know, if you think back to your marriage vows, your marriage, and maybe we didn't all say the exact same words. We may have had different marriage vows. But there was probably something in there like, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health. And not that we can't love one another, not that we shouldn't love one another when, if we're rich or if we're healthy or if things are going well, but it's more in those times when we're poor, when we're in bad health, when we're sick. The difficult days of life, that's when really love in a marriage, I believe, begins to show itself and really begins to grow and blossom. And that's true, again, in a lot of other relationships in our life. When difficulty comes, we often find out who we really are and find out how strong that relationship is. I think that's a great thought. We had talked about this when we talked about the fruit of the Spirit several weeks ago, but a passage in Colossians 3 and verse 14. Paul's not saying what he does in this passage and relating it to marriage, but I think the principle applies here, telling us as Christians really in the body of Christ, in our relationships one with another, he says beyond all of these things, beyond putting on the heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, forgiveness, all of those things, beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. So love is really that characteristic that binds us together. So it makes us or helps us to be one flesh, as God intended for that relationship to be, as David pointed out several times in the last few weeks. Kind of thinking back to Todd's point, I had thought of something related to that, that godly love, this agape kind of love, really provides the right soil for husbands and wives to plant other spiritual seeds. In fact, without love, no other spiritual fruit will be produced. It's kind of like the garden. It's the right soil we have to start with. And unless we have this selfless, sacrificial, serving kind of love that we're always thinking about the needs of our spouse instead of our own needs and putting their needs first, unless we have that again as the foundation of our marriage, we're going to have a hard time with romantic love. We're going to have a hard time with the phileo kind of love, friendship kind of love. That agape kind of love has to be the starting point for us. And as Duke said, we have to keep that going. As we've already looked at, I think, several times in this class and in David's class as well, in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. And we related that, I think, a few weeks ago to some of these other characteristics that are mentioned in Galatians 5. But love is patient. Love is kind. I mean, love is a starting for all of the fruit of the Spirit. Anybody else think about something related to love in our marriage? So maybe if we're having a problem with romantic love, we're having a problem with the friendship kind of love, we need to go back and look at the agape love and work on that ourselves. Both of us work on that together. And I think if we get that straightened out, then other things kind of take care of themselves.
I think if you ask that small group that had been married over 50 years, if they had to categorize those three types of love, where did they spend most of their time in as a couple, if that's possible. But most of it is going to be on the agape love. And then after that is that friendship love, because that's what your marriage is, that they should be your best friend. And then there's the romantic type of love that's still part of that, but it's probably nowhere near what the other two were or are and in their relationship.
Yeah, the world kind of has it backwards, doesn't it? I mean, certainly marriage is under attack from all sides today, so that's a whole other issue. But just even when it was kind of commonly accepted in our culture that, for two people to engage in certain activities that they need to be married and it need to be a man and a woman. And that was going to be for life. Even then, it was more portrayed, I mean, the most important kind of love is the romantic kind of love. For the very, do you have a comment?
1 John 4, verse 8. Mm-hmm. Says, he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. There's a lot of implications there in the context of what that means.
As really a lot of these characteristics are, but especially love, love is something that is learned. We have to learn that from God. We have to learn that through the Word of God. It's something that is active. It's an action. It's not just an emotion. It is something that's given. That love can be received. But more this kind of love, we're thinking about how can I give, how can I show my spouse love rather than how can they show me love? Because love doesn't seek its own. The passage that I think I mentioned in David's class several weeks ago, Genesis chapter 24 and verse 67, talking about Isaac when Abraham sent his servant off to another country to find a wife for him, and Rebecca was coming back with the servant, and Isaac saw her at a distance coming toward him. Verse 67 says, and Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebecca, and she became his wife, and he loved her. Interestingly enough, that word, the Hebrew word love, is the same Hebrew word that is used in the Old Testament that Jesus quotes in the New Testament, not love your neighbor as yourself. So he's not talking so much about he loved her in the sense of romantic love or erotic love. It's talking about he loved her in the sense of the gospel. And he had never seen her before. But he made a choice that if this was the woman that his father had picked for him to spend his life with, he was going to love her. Yes, sir.
I think the world has kind of got the concept that I kind of had when I started, and I need to change a lot of stuff. But what I understood when you get married is you feed them and clothe them, and if they have any problem, they call you anytime, whatever, you're there. No matter if they have to take your life for theirs. And that was basically a lot of what I know by not growing up in the church. I grew up close to a church, but didn't go that much. So it's hard for me to figure all this stuff. I mean, it's not hard for me to figure out, but I can see where all the stuff I've done is pretty much wrong the way I started out.
Well, and that's the good news of the gospel. You know, wherever we are, we realize that we can change. Even if we grew up in a, you know, a Christian home, we may not have seen, you know, as David mentioned several times, there is no perfect marriage. Even if we grew up with both of our parents as very religious people, very much Christ-like people, they're going to have problems. You know, but maybe it's more how they handle those problems.
Anybody see that picture and caption on the couple who's been married 77 years, and then she died, and 2 or 3 hours later he died, and they buried both of them in the same casket?
Yeah, I may read that story here next week or the week after. That is a very good, encouraging story. Brother Todd?
Go back to your comment about Isaac and Rebecca and the love that he had. How do you suppose that marriage worked in that case? Maybe just think about that for a minute. And it's maybe one verse or part of a verse about Isaac loved Rebecca. But there's a lot of meaning to that. I think that maybe sometimes today we miss in the fact that what you said, that he had never met her before. But they were married and he loved her. And so it didn't have anything to do with attraction. It didn't have anything to do with them having things in common, liking the same thing or having the same career or a lot of things, like you said before, that the world puts their emphasis on. It had nothing to do with that. It's the fact that the love was that unconditional love, that I'm going to love you regardless of what you look like, who you are, what you know, the thoughts that you have, the feelings that you have, the emotions that you have. I mean, for all we know, she might have been very needy, you know, and had emotional issues, or he might have been, I don't know, I'm just making it up. But the point is that he loved her for who she was. And she did the same thing.
Yeah, it's a choice, and it's very, I think that we talked about even in just love in general from the fruit of the Spirit. It's the idea of that's really what it is.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was thinking as you're talking, I know you're trying to discuss the love without preparation, but kind of skipping to our culture today, you get to pick who you're married to. So that comes with planning, and that comes with preparation. And if it's one thing that I've learned from members of my family is they didn't plan and prepare to get married, and they failed. So, you know, so for the young people, or people, I guess, not young, that aren't married, you have to be around people that you're going to want to marry, if that makes any sense. So that means that you might, you know, get a job where Christians are, because you want to marry a Christian, or move somewhere where Christians are, because you want to do that. You know, I've said that to young people, and sometimes they look at me like, "But my family's over here." I'm like, "Yeah, but is there Christians there?" And they said, "Well, no, not really, because I grew up where there weren't any. And had I stayed where I lived, I wouldn't have married a Christian. And if there was one, she might not want to marry me, because, you know, that's just the environment that I grew up in." So I guess that's what I can think about today, is we need to be the type of people who, for those of us who are married, raise our children, if we have those, or help raise other children, if we're around them, to understand that it takes planning and preparation to have a marriage that's successful. It's not just, you know, I like to think years ago when people had arranged marriages in our country and more of the, you know, they got married real quick, like maybe some of the people who are here did that. But today it's just, we're a self-centered culture. Especially, you know, different generations. So that's what I think of, is we see a lot of really good examples of people taking love for what it was at that time. But if we parallel that to our culture today, you know, we plan everything. We plan plan our finances, we plan our jobs and careers, but somehow people forget to plan who they're going to marry, and that's the most important one. And so that's, I guess, what I learned from my parents, who were married 50 years. My sister and brother are both married 25 years or more. So that's what I took from them as being the baby in the family.
That's
good.
Carrie, did you have a comment?
There's just a lot of things that go into following what Kevin said. Number one, I'm not sure all of us would agree or say that our children take into consideration everything we tell them to do. Especially like the marriage thing. And sometimes they're just some couples that have one of the partners that are just ugly. And because of what you said earlier, which is they love the things of this world, their thoughts are assuredly different than ours. And it is, as you said, learning to or think they're in love and saying they're in love, but they had no idea what's in front of them.
Right. And like David mentioned, I mean, you know, falling in love and fall out of love. But that's not the kind of love that's associated with fruit of the Spirit. David, the Lord.
What I was going to say is, I know it's hard for you, some of y'all to believe, but I wasn't always this lovable. But you hear, you know, Robert George's comment probably to this thought, and it's, you go through rough patches in your life, including your marriage, and it's not all perfect. It's kind of like driving a four-wheeler across, whether you go across the hayfield or the cornfield, which is the best way, which is the hayfield, regardless of what direction you go. Some people say, well, if I could go back 20 years, I would change this, this, or this. You know, although Trish and I've had rough patches in our life and in our marriage, I don't know if I would change any of it. And the reason is, during those times that I wasn't as lovable as I am perhaps today, which sometimes I'm still not, but to me, that made us stronger as a couple, because to me, it opened my eyes and I saw how much she truly did love me. And it is that agape love, that she loved me during times that I probably didn't even love myself, but she still did. And I think that's what I get from that, and that's why I say I probably wouldn't change anything, because it taught me a lot. And it was hard lessons at times, but I knew at that moment when it clicks with you that, hey, she loves me regardless of what I say, what I do, it doesn't matter. She set the example when I didn't.
Yeah, I think that's great comment. And hopefully if we're paying attention in those times when we're unlovable and our spouse continues to show love to us, that ought to make us love them even more. It's like God loving us when we were unlovable. And that ought to just motivate us so much more to love Him in return. Mark?
Another problem that seems to exist in the culture in today's world, especially the United States that we live in now, there's a lot of people that don't even put any stock in marriage. They move in together, they may or may not have kids, and they live together for a while. If something comes up, they don't want to try to make it work. They just get out of it. They're not bonded the way that we see that God has told us to be bonded with each other. And of course, that goes with a lot of different principles from God's word. It's not just marriage that people don't adhere to. It just seems like that's just so prevalent in our society today that a lot of people I know that live together aren't married.
Right.
And that's a disgrace.
And that's why, you know, Colossians 3:14, that love is the bond of you, the perfect bond of mutual perfection. And love is what really maybe provides the glory for us to be united as brethren and as husbands and wives. Maybe just some, you know, I want us to get practical. You don't have to give all of your ideas, but just, you know, how we can incorporate love, how we can grow in love in our marriage relationship. And I know David has mentioned some of these things in the Sunday morning class, but, you know, when your spouse is just having a a rough day and worn out, maybe they're sick, maybe they've had a bad day at work, to do, you know, if you're a husband, to do dishes for your wife, or to do chores around the house, whatever, you know, that is, to show that kind of love for them, that you're thinking about them. It's been mentioned, I think it was Gary Sandusky a long time ago, mentioned about he and his wife every Friday night went out for a hamburger, just had a date night. Listen, if you're in my age group, and you have kids my age, sometimes that's hard to do. Me and Anna maybe get a date night once every 2 or 3 months. But we need to do that, to just have time for ourselves, away from our children. Maybe it's just, you know, after the children have gone to bed, that we can spend time, however we do in our marriage, trying to infuse this kind of love into it, going along with the friendship kind of love and the romantic kind of love. I think I told y'all before, if you've been here a while, that before we got married, my father-in-law, who preached here last Sunday morning, he set me and Anna down in his office a couple of months before we got married because he was doing our ceremony. And he gave both of us a blank sheet of paper. And he said, I want you to write, each of you to write on here 10 reasons why you want to marry the other person. 10 reasons why you love the other person.
And, did you come up short? Did you come up short? No number.
No, I came up with 10. But, you know, I was sitting there writing and thinking, is he going to look at this? What's he going to do with this? But we both wrote those, and instead of us handing them to him, he said, I want you to hand it to each other. And we read them. He didn't ask anything in the love. And he just said, you know, if you want to, every year on your anniversary, write another reason. And it's just something to remind yourself. You know, it's kind of like my father-in-law has done that with people who have become Christians. The day they became Christian, or soon thereafter, to write down some reasons why they became Christian. Because in years to come, there are going to be times when it's going to be very difficult. There are going to be times when that commitment to God and Christ is not going to be as strong, and your enthusiasm and your zeal is not going to be what it was when you first became a Christian. And instead of just chunking that relationship and saying, hey, I'm going back to the world, you can pull out that sheet of paper and remind yourself why you became a Christian. And it's kind of a reminder for those of us who are married.
There are questions.
Yes, sir.
Where do you put as an individual or a but isn't putting your spouse first way up on the list, if not, of course, after God, number two or three?
Well, we didn't get too far, but I think we had a really good discussion. Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, just real quick, I want to, we talked about it in the Sunday morning class. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, where it talks about husbands dwelling with your wives with understanding. And I think it goes both ways, but we talked about understanding the things that they like. And we mentioned it as their love language. How do they feel about certain things? And sometimes it may be, as you mentioned, the acts. It may be the words of kindness. It may be different things. It's not always going to be the same as yours. So don't do something for your spouse thinking that they're going to like it because you like it. You have to understand, like 1 Peter 3, what their likes and dislikes are.
And it may change somewhat.
It may change.
Next week, we're going to continue looking at joy and peace. Hopefully, get through several